you know, I don't understand prayer. I don't really fully appreciate how it works. It is a mystery, I think, for any of us. I have a hard time thinking about prayer, and this is like a sermon before the sermon. I'm just on a tangent here. But a friend of mine recently told me that even though prayer is confusing and it's hard to think exactly what we're doing, there's something there. And I felt it earlier as Emily was praying and as Al was just praying. And man, there is a power to prayer that is inexplicable. And so thank you, Al. Thanks, Emily. Thank you for all of you who pray for each other, for our church, for the world throughout the week. Even though prayer is a mystery and confusing, I think it makes a difference. So thank you. Another tangent I want to go on before I get started is I've been getting tongue-tied a lot lately, I've noticed. I don't know what it is, but I've been just having a really hard time talking recently. And if you know me, you know that that's not normal. I can usually talk my way into or out of anything. And my mom's testifying over here. and my wife's just not shaking her head. And, you know, I feel like I can articulate what I'm thinking often. And I've just noticed a lot of times recently, I don't know, like I'll be referring to somebody and I'll accidentally refer to the person who I'm talking to and not to the person I'm trying to refer to. I'm like, wait, no, that's you. You're here. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is I hope that I can actually say what I'm trying to say this morning, and I'm hoping that Al's prayer really does help the Spirit to take hold and to speak this morning, because I don't know, I've been a bit of a mess lately, so I don't know what it is. But anyway, let's dive into the real deal now. This past couple of weeks, Daniel has started us into a series on the book of Revelation. And the book of Revelation, speaking of things being a mystery and hard to understand, the book of Revelation is that, right? If you've ever read it, if you've ever studied it, there's a whole lot to it. And so when Daniel asked me to preach today, he said, do you want to, first of all, he said, you can go whichever direction you want. You can stay on the theme or you can go somewhere else. And I thought, well, you know, you have this theme. I'd like to, you know, stay on theme, but the book of Revelation is confusing and hard to talk about, so I don't know. I'm kind of scared, but kind of also want the challenge. And so it brought me to a thought. A couple of weeks ago in Daniel's sermon, he mentioned how prophecy is most often thought of as what? Future telling. Did I hear somebody say future telling? Future telling. Most oftentimes we think of prophecy as future telling, and he challenged that notion in his sermon, and it made me think of a book that I had read long ago. And I asked Daniel if he had read this book, and he hadn't. And so I thought, man, what would it do to just have a quick just discussion on prophecy, and specifically what the prophetic imagination did and can look like? And so this morning, while I'm not going to explicitly talk about the book of Revelation, I want to talk about prophecy, how it's looked in the past, how it can look now, and how it can stimulate our imaginations to create a better world. A lot of the thoughts that I am preaching on this morning are from this book here. This is a book called The Prophetic Imagination by a well-known scholar named Walter Brueggemann. He is very scholastic and very academic and very hard to read sometimes, especially for simpletons like myself. But very, very good. I highly recommend the book. But when we discuss prophecy, one of the things that I think our society and our theological minds co-opt often is that we assume prophecy is either future-telling or social protest. Like it lives in one of these two camps. Has anybody ever kind of heard that that's it? That's what prophecy is. And prophecy is so much more. Prophecy is an imagination to not only speak out against things that might be wrong, but also to imagine a newness, to imagine a way forward that is from the Lord, that is of the gospel. Prophecy also often speaks of the incongruence between our public convictions and our personal yearnings. Prophets are concerned not with some future foretelling, but often prophets are speaking about the most elemental changes in our human condition and are speaking a newness, a revelation from God that is about a new way forward for us to be closer to Him and to know Him better. The task of prophetic ministry is to nurture, nourish, and evoke a consciousness and perception alternative to that of dominant culture. I'm going to say that again. This is a quote directly from the book that I thought was really good. The task of prophetic ministry is to nurture, nourish, and evoke a consciousness and perception alternative to the dominant culture. And he talks a lot about all the different types of prophetic ministries that happened throughout the scriptures. And so I just wanted to touch on them just to kind of go through a tour of different types of prophecy that happened in our scriptures. The first one is the alternative community of Moses. The way that Moses spoke out prophetically is that he called a people out from a culture that was not of God. He called them out and he found with the Lord a new way for the people of Israel to live. This prophecy of creating an alternative community was the prophecy, was one of the first and the most specific examples that we see in the Old Testament of this type of prophecy. To leave a culture and then to come out and to create all this new, basically a new society, the people of Israel had to rebuild themselves because they had been lost for hundreds of years. This prophecy was the prophecy of an alternative community. And then, as you know, the people of Israel grew and changed and moved and eventually came to the place that they would stay, and they began to build a great kingdom. And this great kingdom then began to see kings. And the kings then began to see, to start to live in a way that was counter to their alternative community. The kings began to lead the people of Israel ultimately away from God. And so then the next type of prophecy that we saw was countering the counterculture. See, the people of Israel had started this counterculture that was supposed to be opposed to the kingdoms and the power-hungry ways of Egypt. But then eventually they grew into a society that looked very, very much like that. By the time of Solomon, affluence, oppression, and a static religion had taken over what was once a people that were the alternative community of equality and justice and living in the fullness of God's liberation. They had lost their way. And so the prophets of that day began to speak counter to the counterculture. The next prophetic criticizing came shortly after this period, and this was a time of mourning. We're probably most familiar with this prophecy in books like Jeremiah and Lamentations, where the prophets just began to see that there was almost no hope. These books, if you read them, sound hopeless often, sound like there is no way forward. The criticizing is an anguish that the culture has fallen so far. We ask ourselves, we've been so co-opted by the society that we thought was our counterculture, but then it ended up not being, that we almost don't even know the way forward. Can we even imagine? Or has our culture robbed us of the power and courage to think alternatively? Have we ourselves been so co-opted by the co-opting of our prophetic imagination that we just mourn the loss? But then emerges from this way the prophetic energizing and hope that we most notably read in the book of Isaiah. A lot of the other minor prophets speak to this into that another way is possible. When all hope seemed lost in the Old Testament, these prophets began to speak specifically, but also very metaphorically, about a new hope, about a new way. They began to emerge about this future possibility that, of course, we see in the aftermath as being the ministry of Jesus, the gospel, the kingdom of heaven coming in all of its fullness. But this prophecy was not just of future telling, but it was an energizing and hope-filled prophecy, speaking to a people that were lamenting that their way of life was lost, saying, no, another way is possible. We can find our way back to God if we just look, if we just hope. Hope is a powerful tool. And then comes Jesus. Obviously, Jesus was a prophet, but we know him as so much more than that. His prophetic imagination was full not only of critique, but also of empathy. Jesus returns to a Mosaic prophetic imagination of counterculture. He's living in this culture that is so co-opted by the religious rules of the day that his ultimate critique was his empathy and his solidarity with marginalized people. People who the religion had said couldn't be a part. People who the society had said weren't good enough. Luke 1:51 through 53 says, he has performed mighty deeds with his arms. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. Jesus' critiques so often spoke against the people who were benefiting from the status quo. His willingness to dine with outcasts threatened the fundamental morality of their society. And he fearlessly reached out to those who were considered unclean. Even his association with women who were not his kin was against the norm and was a breach of decorum for his day. Jesus embodied the prophetic critique that was spoken in the book of Hosea, chapter 6, verse 6, that says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. His mercy poured out on those who have been considered unworthy in society while consistently speaking out against the status quo and those who were in power. Jesus' prophetic imagination allowed him to both speak out to power while also living humbly and in solidarity with those who seemed powerless in his day. And what happened, of course, we all know. This led him to the cross. He then doesn't try to rise to power. He doesn't try to overthrow anything. But he humbly submits himself to the pain and the grief of the present day. Paul writes a letter to the Philippians, and he tells them to be like Jesus in this way. And this is what he says in chapter 2, verse 5. He says, your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. And therefore God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Man. What a prophetic imagination Jesus had. Not one where he stood holier than thou, critiquing everyone because he knew the right way. Because let's face it, he did, right? Also, as an aside, if you're sitting there thinking, wow, Brandon's getting so much better. He has a PowerPoint today. Don't kid yourselves. Martha came up to me this morning and was like, hey, you want me to throw your verse on the PowerPoint? And I said, Martha, that's a great idea. I don't know what I'll do with that. So anyway, in case you're thinking like, oh, Brandon, no, it's all Martha. She's the best. I deserve no credit for that. Moving on. Can you imagine having a prophetic ministry such as that? That even though you have all the answers, being in very nature God, we could change that for ourselves, right? Your attitude should be the same of Jesus. Although you have all the answers, do not consider yourselves to be greater than anyone or to have all the power to do all the things. But rather, make yourself nothing. Empty of yourself to the very point of a servant. To serve is better than to know all the answers. You being found in appearance of a man, humble yourself and be obedient. What prophetic imagination would it look like for us to speak to our world today with an attitude such as that? The last quote I want to read from the book from Walter Brueggemann is one that really left me just awestruck. And it's a bit wordy, so bear with me. But I just couldn't leave it past. Brueggemann says this of Jesus' prophetic ministry. The tradition of radical criticism is about the self-giving emptiness of Jesus, about dominion through the loss of dominion, about fullness coming only by self-emptying. And emptying is the very thing kings cannot do, yet still remain kings. The empty one who willingly surrendered power for obedience is the ultimately powerful one who can permit humanness where no other has authority to do so. The ministry of Jesus spoke in a prophetic way that has truly never been seen before or since. For him to lay down his life, to have all the answers, to be in very nature God, yet to spend a majority of his time with the outcasts, with the ones who were marginalized, with the ones whose society had said were unclean. This critique of society is not just in word, but in deed. He knew that the only way to truly express prophetic imagination was not to stand up on a soapbox in Times Square, to not have all the answers and correct all the people on social media. But he knew the way to be a prophetic voice in his time was to live it. To boldly speak out when those who were in power were calling him out. But more than anything, to spend his time with the people who needed it the most. So hearing all the different prophecies that were spoken throughout the ages, where are we now? Do we know? Can we know in our time? It's hard to say. Where is the Lord speaking to us, and how should our prophetic imagination be speaking out in our society? Is it time to reform a new cultural revolution like Moses? Or do we need to be counter to the counterculture? Has our society lost its way and need to return in newness and freshness to something else? Are we in a day of mourning? Or is there a new hope that's blossoming? Maybe it's far away. Maybe it's hard to see right now. Maybe we're on the precipice of that morning stage and there's something new dawning. Depending on who you are and depending on your worldview, you might have felt like any one of those was true for us today. Depending on your social or economic or political background, we're probably all in a whole lot of different places internally right now. It's difficult to come to consensus on the current state of our culture. We all have different eyes. We all have different worldviews and different perspectives. But nonetheless, no matter who we are, no matter how we believe, no matter where we've come from, we can choose to live in the prophetic ministry of Jesus. The prophetic ministry that we just read in Philippians 2, 5 through 11. And Paul offers us some even more good advice in his following remarks in verses 12 through 18. He goes on to say this, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation in fear and trembling." I don't know about you guys, but I oftentimes wonder, am I doing it right? Am I going the right way? Is what I believe the thing? Like, did I miss something? I can't speak for you, but I can speak for me when I say that this verse, to live out your salvation with fear and trembling, has spoken to me more times than I can count. To say that I'm trying to follow in the way of Jesus, but also to have the humility to say, I'm not sure. Because you know what? Surety sounds a lot different than faith to me. Those things sound the opposite and not the same. I hope that you are living out your faith with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. Therefore, do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. You might read that and think, oh man, he's talking about us. He's not. He was talking about them way back then. We always think it's worse now, right? Oh, things are really going downhill. It was 2,000 years ago. This warped and crooked generation, like, this isn't new. None of this is new. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky, as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. You see, Jesus' prophetic ministry, he was poured out. He emptied himself to show those who he was immediately with that he cared about them and that he was going to be obedient to the Father no matter what it took. His prophetic way was a way that nurtured, nourished, and evoked a consciousness and perception alternative to that of the dominant culture. Yet he didn't feel the need to go out of his way to prove his point or to make sure everybody knew he was right. That was not his prophecy. And his prophecy wasn't that of future telling. Although there are some remarks that he made that were things that happened in the future that came true, like his resurrection and the temple, for two examples. So my prayer for us as we continue to study Revelation, as we continue to study the Word, as we continue to live out this thing called our Christian faith, my prayer for us is that our prophetic imaginations would be stimulated so that we could live like Jesus, so that we could live in a way that we would empty ourselves to take on the nature of a servant, so that we would give to others, and that our lives would be made full by that emptying. That we would not consider equality or knowing everything something to be grasped, but that we would work out our faith in fear and trembling. And we would consider how we can improve the elemental human condition, how we can make all of our lives, our brothers and sisters, and even our enemies amongst us, better. And that will then reflect the kingdom of God. That is the gospel. May this be true of us. May this be our prophetic imagination in our day. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you for who you are. We thank you for the stories of old. Stories like that, God, just make us so much richer, so much fuller in our knowledge of who you are, who you have called those in the past to be, and who you are yearning for us to be. God, we ask that you would spark an imagination in us so great that we would love our neighbors fiercely, God. That we would love those around us with so much humility and passion that they'll know we're Christians by our love. God, I ask that you would help us to read your word and to just continually to reflect on all the good stuff you've done and all the pain that is also in those words, and how your testimony has been working out since the beginning. God, may we, your people, seek you in spirit and truth. May we work not by power, not by might, but by your Spirit, God. May we humble ourselves to the point of being servants. And in all this, may your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.